Good Thursday afternoon, and welcome into Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. It's July 31st, 2025, just after 2 o'clock. Happy Major League Baseball trade deadline.
Die.
Happy Will Mackenzie Gore be on the Nationals when we go to bed.
Die.
6 o'clock, 4 hours from now. The Major League Baseball trade deadline. The Nats and interim general manager Mike DiBartolo have been moving and shaking. They've done a lot of the easy stuff. If somebody's not under contract for next year, they're not bolted down. You can flip them. You get a couple of minor leaguers back. Best you can do, you just make the trade because it's either they walk or you get something back. So while I think they've done okay in a lot of these returns in terms of getting multiple minor leaguers to add to their system, the fact is they really haven't gotten anything overly notable. Because they're not giving up anything that's overly valuable. Ahmed Rosario, Andrew Chafin, Luis Garcia, the pitcher, Michael Soroka, Kyle Finnegan, all on expiring contracts. When there's no control beyond this season, when you're just renting someone who's not a star or an impact player, you're not going to give up a lot, and so they're not going to do great in a return. That would change, though, if you traded Mackenzie Gore.
There you have it.
Who has 2 years of control left after this year. So 3 postseasons, 2.5 years. But the big question is, will ownership sign off on a deal if Mike DiBartolo can get a quality offer to allow him to make that trade? Because it's going to result in some fan animus. It's going to result in some butts not being in seats, which is already a problem.
Right. I was going to say, what's going to happen? You're going to be in last place? What's going to happen? Are fans going to be annoyed? What's going to happen? We're already there. So, you know, if you're of a move takes fan annoyance, I'm just making up the scale, from 1 to 7, you got to consider it. If it's you're already walking in at an 8 and it takes it to a 9 or 10, is that the worst thing in the world? The answer is, you know, some people might tell you, yes, we can't afford any more bad PR, but it's a baseball decision. So I think that's kind of conventional, right? That's where the debate stands now, is if the baseball folks have a trade in place, will ownership sign off on it? I think that's kind of where this is. I don't think you're getting that with moving Ahmed Rosario.
No, I mean, it's complicated because it takes two hurdles being cleared. The first is you need a really quality return. That goes without saying.
Right.
You're not trading Mackenzie Gore if you can't do exceptionally well in what you're getting back. So getting that deal is hard. But when you do, now you need ownership to say, yeah, no problem. And after years and years and years of Mike Rizzo running the front office, they may have been more willing to tell Rizzo, all right, if you love it, we'll do it, then maybe an interim GM and Mike DiBartolo, who's a first-timer at the trade deadline. But we'll see if he can get this done in the next 3 hours and 55 minutes. We will keep you abreast of everything going on with the Nationals. They did trade Kyle Finnegan this afternoon. They flipped him to the Detroit Tigers for a pair of 22-year-old pitching prospects who come back. One of them was actually the number 15 prospect in Detroit's minor league system. But in Josh Randall and RJ Sales, they had two arms to their system for Finnegan, who had completely come apart at the seams here, as he tends to every year before the trade deadline.
Yep.
I feel like we have the same conversation every year. Can they get anything for Kyle Finnegan? And then the weeks leading up to the trade deadline, he does whatever he can to make sure that his value dissipates at the most important point of the season.
Yeah, the slow start into workhorse, gets up 7,000 times, is pitching 3 straight days or back-to-back days or 4 out of 5 days, then gets loose on the 6th day. Davey Martinez rides him into the ground, and sure enough, somehow, some way, in July and August, he doesn't throw as good as he did in May and June. But yeah, it is a sort of time-honored ride. He was an All-Star last year, saved 38 games. Probably gets by a little bit more on guts than he does on pure stuff at this stage, but is a back-end reliever, maybe not the closer that a first-division team would want, but could certainly help get you big outs.
I want to get to football in a second, but one more thing on the Nats here. This is not a report. People don't know the difference between reporting and just saying things, and most of you don't care, but I'm just saying, I'm throwing this out there, I'm not reporting anything, I'm just telling you what I heard yesterday. So what I was told from someone super plugged in on what's going on around Major League Baseball in front offices yesterday was that the Nationals would definitely be trading Michael Soroka, Kyle Finnegan, Josh Bell ahead of the trade deadline. I was also told that they are listening on and would like to, if they could find a dance partner, find a trade for Luis Garcia Jr., their second baseman.
Hmm.
But that because of his years of control remaining in his age, they want to do really well in the return. Whereas with Finnegan, you trade him no matter what. You're just getting the best possible return. That's very different than, we're only going to trade Luis Garcia if we can get what we feel like is good value. But they are listening in on and okay moving him if they can get the right price, basically. The most interesting one is Gore, and what I was told, and the reason I keep bringing up the ownership thing, is that that could be a major stumbling block. That even if they get a really quality offer, that ownership might not be willing to sign off on that. Now, I haven't talked to anybody in ownership. I don't know if that's gospel. That's just what I'm hearing. But again, we will keep you abreast as we get closer to 6 p.m. Darris, when the Nats hit a home run, there's that like horn sound over at Nats Park. You know it? You're familiar with it?
Kind of I am familiar with it, yes.
We
hear it not that often this year, but we hear it.
Very rarely do we hear. We actually hear it more often this year than we did last year, believe it or not, thanks to James Wood. But let me hear that. Is that like a ship? Or so, it feels very like dockyardy to me. What is that horn?
So it's supposed to be, I remember reading this up a couple years ago, it's supposed to be a Navy type tribute. I'll have to look up the exact phrasing for it, but it's something to do with the Navy.
Makes sense to me.
Navy Yard.
I hear that, I think water. So
yeah.
Sure. Where
it's like, hey, man, let me know if I'm close to hitting the dock and there's a lot of fog.
When Josh Bell is likely traded between now and six, fire that off and let us know. That'll be how we let people know the Nats have made another trade. If Mackenzie Gore gets traded, I'd like to hear that sound again with the breaking Nats news. We got two Commanders interviews for you today. I was out at training camp. It was hot and sweaty, but we did get to catch up with Jonathan Jones, the new cornerback. You're going to hear that at 2:45. Danny, you sleep on Jonathan Jones as a pilot.
I do. I will fully admit that.
Who flew themselves to Ashburn to report to Commanders training camp this year?
I'm going to use context clues here. Jonathan Jones?
Jonathan Jones.
How about that?
Who flies himself home to visit his 9-month pregnant wife when he gets a day off? This guy, I asked so many dumb questions because you know how fascinated I am by like air travel. So I'm like, wait a second. So do you need a grown-up with you in the co-pilot seat or are you the grown-up? He's like, no, I am the grown-up. Like me and my wife fly around wherever we want to go, and it's just me and her and our kids. He's a pilot,
and one of the little dumb planes with a lawnmower engine.
A plane.
Oh, my God.
He has his own plane, and he flies his family around. And he just when he wants to go somewhere, like this summer, they went on a vacation internationally. He got the thing set up at the airport. However, rich people do that, and he flew the plane to where they were going.
But you know what I'm trying to say, right? Is it like a real plane, or is it one of those like lawnmower engine, how is this thing in the air for more than 2 seconds, toys?
He says the name of the plane and the type of the plane in the interview.
Okay.
So when you hear it, you can Google it. I don't know enough about planes. I'm assuming it's not what you fly on with Southwest.
Right.
But it's also probably not what you're thinking of, which is like what you would have. But it's probably closer to that.
Yeah. Like
I don't think he's flying around in like a 40-seater.
Okay.
I think this is a very small plane. But he was able to fly internationally. He went to an island somewhere.
So it's more than the lawnmower. Because I think we should stop the lawnmower thing. 100% believe that.
I am immensely impressed by anybody who flies themselves places. Now, I would never do that. And I would also never get on Jonathan Jones's plane. And it's no disrespect to him. I've just got a little thing about me where unless I'm on a commercial flight where a company stands to lose billions of dollars if something bad happens, I ain't getting on your plane. That's just kind of my own rule with myself.
Okay.
But I love that he has his pilot's license and that he just, that's his hobby. Some dudes watch Netflix. He flies around places.
So let me ask you this, like for your rule, because I know I'm fascinated by that. Let's say somehow, and it wasn't a professional problem, right? It wouldn't be some conflict of interest deal or whatever. But imagine an owner of one of the sports teams is like, hey, GP, I'm headed to the same place you are. We're both going to Vegas for something. You want to hop on the beach?
It's a private jet?
Yeah.
No, I would do that. That's like a sanctioned... It's not like a guy whose second job is being a pilot. That's the difference to me. Like,
you're not also a pilot.
Exactly.
Right.
Jonathan Jones is an NFL player who decided in his free time, I'm going to become a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who get home from work and put their briefcase down and they were at the office all day and then they go to the local airport and they go up in their little Cessna or whatever. Nope.
Nope.
Not that.
Yeah, no to that.
So when... You know, Mitch Rails and Josh Harris call me up and say, hey, man, we just love your work. We're going to fly you to the playoff game with us this weekend.
Hey, GPA, we're rolling to Detroit. You in?
You're going
to
eat a bunch of meatballs and buffalo wings on the flight with us. The guy flying that plane or the lady flying that plane flies that plane all the time.
That's what they do.
I think the way it works, and I don't know, someone smarter than me and richer than me could tell you. I'm pretty sure the PJ thing, when you go private jet, there's like an American Airlines pilot, basically, that's assigned to that flight, I would imagine. I think it's the same person that probably is flying you and me to spring training in West Palm. That day, they were just told, hey, this guy needs a pilot. Go out to runway number 7B, and you're flying this private jet. I think that's how it works. I could be wrong. But I just, is it your hobby? Did you do this because you had some spare time? Then I will not be flying with you.
So the Googles is telling me that private jets are typically flown by professional pilots who are employed by the jet's owner or a private aviation company.
Oh, if you're rich enough, that's true. Josh Harris probably has his own pilot all the time. But like, I bet that guy's profession is
pilot.
Pilot.
Yeah, you're not doing the, it's not a hobbyist. It's flying around.
So
you
now understand what I'm saying.
I know what you mean.
You either like, there might be someone who does a podcast when they get home from work. This is our profession.
Yeah.
King Leonidas style. What is your profession? We're radio guys. If you're doing a podcast, I'm not knocking you. I respect it. If you need me to come on your podcast, I'm happy to do that. But your job is whatever you're doing all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And then you play podcaster at night. Jonathan Jones kind of plays pilot. But I don't want this to be a negative thing. I think it's amazing that he's a pilot.
It's a hell of a hobby.
It's just, I'm not going to be flying with him. And it's okay, because he doesn't want me to fly with
right.
him.
Right. You're not invited. But even if you were invited, right. you'd say no.
I don't get the sense he's going to ask me to fly with him anytime
After one
soon.
Conversation, you don't think he's like, you should come with me to Martha's Vineyard.
He couldn't have been a nicer guy, so yeah. It's very possible he would have invited me. I actually asked him after the conversation. I said, so have you flown any of your teammates? He said, yeah, after minicamp.
Oh, my God.
He took Trey Amos, the second-year rookie corner, with him. I don't remember where they went. I think they went to Charlotte or something. But he jumped on the plane with him, and they just went. That's amazing to me. You just met this guy. You've known him for 2 days, and you're like, yeah, I'll fly with you.
No problem, buddy.
Also on the show today, not a pilot.
Not a pilot.
Brandon Coleman.
We should have to distinguish from here on out, like any guest, pilot or not pilot.
Offensive lineman, was a tackle. Mm-hmm. He's also not a tackle anymore. He's now a left guard. I think Brandon Coleman's one of the better dudes on the team. Nobody holds court longer with the media, says yes to more interviews, just a soft-spoken, sharp guy. He's got a wedding coming up. He's got a new dog. And he's here to kick some butt in the interior of the offensive line. So we'll talk to Jonathan Jones, the pilot slash cornerback, at 2:45, and Brandon Coleman today at 5:45. Danny, happy football season. And to all of you listening, we
everyone celebrates.
It. The football season begins tonight, unofficially, with the Hall of Fame game. Nationally televised. NBC is back. We are back. We are getting football back. Now, I know this game's going to stink. I know none of the starters that we care about will play. I know quarterbacks will be playing who I don't even remember from college. And yet, Danny, every year when I settle into my recliner and I turn on the TV and for the first time you see Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels talking ball, there's just something right with the world again.
This Collinsworth slide, it's going to happen. You're not going to know most of the players, and you'll be bored as you watch the game, but that's not what it's about.
It's about the telecast for me more than it is about the actual game itself. It's just like a Thursday night with Thursday night football with the big pomp and circumstance. They're doing the same graphics. They got the same angles. They got the same high definition. Al Michaels, while you know, he's going to be the same low-energy broadcaster. Like, they are going through the motions as if it's week one. And I guess tonight it's Mike Tirico? Or is it always Mike Tirico now? Al Michaels is on Prime.
He's doing Amazon Prime.
Yeah, that's true. So Tirico and Collinsworth. So actually, it's a good broadcast. We don't have to worry about falling asleep in the second quarter. That's good. I'm out of practice. I forgot. Al Michaels is on a different network.
So again, it's one of those, like, I could care less about the game. I don't care about any element of Detroit or I mean, I guess I want to see Jim Harbaugh storming around and being a crazy person. But generally, I think you've kind of touched the point here, which is it's not about the game. It's about the fact that the games are here. You know what I mean? Like, this is the, if you've ever been to a formal event, right, where, and you haven't eaten beforehand, and you're sitting there doing the cocktail hour, and you're mingling around, you're making conversations. Like, oh, so where do you guys, how long have you been there? Oh my God, where'd you move from? You did. I know someone that was there one time. Really? And where'd you go to school? Is that where you always wanted? Did you apply early? Like, you're, oh my God, get me to dinner. And then the guy with the white gloves comes around and goes, ding, 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 ding. ding, 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 ding. Let's wrap up our conversations and make your way to the dining room. It's dinner time.
Yeah.
I'm not eating right now, but I'm wrapping up the conversation. I'm now headed to my seat with my little name tag. I'm now going to the place where the food is, and I'm hungry. I'm ready to consume. I'm hungry, and I'm going to watch. The little bell's ringing. That's all I'm saying.
I'm just so much happier in my life when we're at a point of the calendar where a few nights a week, there's a primetime nationally telecast, network-level NFL broadcast. And that season kicks off tonight. Now you'll get your Monday Night Football ramp-ups. You're going to get, you know, everyone does their preseason thing too. Fox and CBS are going to have their games. And we're here. The wait is over. I know that the Commanders don't play a preseason game for a week. I'm aware of the information. And I understand that they don't play a game that's even significant in the preseason in terms of actual legitimate playing time for starters for another few weeks. But tonight is still important. And I will have that game on for the duration. Because even though I don't know most of the guys on these teams, I'm not at their training camps, I don't know the storylines, I don't follow random lower-level college football enough to be plugged in on all of these players, it's just the vibes of football. It's Tirico and Collinsworth, and they do a good job as well, kind of talking about the upcoming season, previewing NFL storylines, weaving those things into the broadcast so that it's not completely boring and just watching dudes that you don't know. I want to let you know about a couple of guys I thought had great practices today, Danny. There's a young wide receiver for the Commanders that I'm ready to say I'm officially very, very interested in going into the preseason because he's been balling out. Plus, a defensive back stood out big time today. I'll tell you who. And I want to get you the latest on Terry McLaurin. We've got a slight update on McLaurin to tackle as soon as we return on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Longtime Patriots cornerback Jonathan Jones in year one with the Commanders on the show at 2:45 in about 20 minutes. Major League Baseball trade deadline today. The big question, will the Nats pull off a deal to send Mackenzie Gore out for high-end prospects? Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. So I told you I wanted to give you a few guys that I thought had really good practices.
Yes, indeed.
Rookie wide receiver Jalen Lane out of Virginia Tech, Danny, continues to impress me. I have low expectations for him this season, specifically because I think the role he's mostly going to play in this offense is the Deebo Samuel role of like jet action in the backfield, some bubble and screen stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if Deebo's healthy, that's going to be him. But also because last year, you know, Jalen Lane is a wide receiver at Virginia Tech, caught only 38 balls. It wasn't like he was overly involved. For his college career, he had a couple hundred catches, mostly Middle Tennessee State. Last 2 years at Virginia Tech, he caught 79 balls in the ACC. But I will say today, he caught two long balls where he got wide open deep from Sam Hartman. One was on like a deep corner route where Hartman rolled out against his arm to the left out of the pocket and kind of set and threw, and Lane was behind everybody and would have scored on a long touchdown. Another was on a seam shot down the field where he just got behind his assignment and made a really nice hands catch. But he is just extremely noticeable. I was standing next to Brian Mitchell as he was, you know, scoring one of the touchdowns, and B. Mitch was saying, like, he just keeps making plays. That's all you can do. And he's listed. I've stood next to him. He's not a big guy, like around 5'10-ish maybe, but he's got speed. He's got twitch. He's got some wiggle in the open field. I am 100% intrigued by Jalen Lane.
I wonder what, if everything was ideal and he had every opportunity and was, you know, fed the ball appropriately, et cetera, what his ceiling is. Because I just don't know. You mentioned the college production. And Middle Tennessee State was a 70-catch, 940-yard receiver. I have no idea who they're playing against. I don't know if that's valid, not valid, whatever. Then at Virginia Tech, quarterback issues abound. Got used, you know, almost as much in terms of jet sweeps and those kind of actions as they did throwing the football. But that doesn't necessarily tell you all the traits. It doesn't tell you that he had he gone somewhere else, more prolific or the more wide-open offense or an air raid type system. What could he have done? I don't know. But the things that you haven't seen from college are some of the route running, the precision, what can you do in the full route tree, et cetera. I still don't know that. I can't. That's one of those guys that I cannot wait to see in preseason.
Well, he told us when we talked to him after the draft, if you remember, that he thought he was going to bring speed, the ability to get open down the field. And you've seen that in practice. Whether that translated in the game or not, I'm not sure. But how I would say it is kind of what you just said, which is we are closing in on a preseason game against the New England Patriots. It'd be great to be there and to be lucky enough to be at that practice. It's on the road. I'm not traveling. Because the 11-on-11 work would be great as well. It's the same as a game, essentially. Might even be more helpful to dictate who's what and who's not. Just to watch those situations, those game reps that you're getting. But in the preseason game, I'm guessing that a guy like that is going to play a lot. Especially without Terry McLaurin. It's not like you're going to have Deebo Samuel playing in that game for more than a series, if at all. So that means someone like Jalen Lane's going to get reps. And I am fired up to watch him. I mentioned Sam Hartman threw him both of those passes. Hartman had a really good day today. And I've kind of been wondering, does he just go on the practice squad again, or does he make the team? You've got Jaden Daniels as your starter, and Marcus Mariota as your backup. There are two other quarterbacks at camp. It's Hartman in year two, and then Josh Johnson, who they brought in, who has played for a near record amount of teams at the quarterback position. Start at camp, I would have bet Josh Johnson's the three, just like Driscoll was the three last year, and Hartman just remains on the practice squad. And that might actually be what they do and what they're thinking. I don't know. Is someone going to pluck Sam Hartman? Probably not. I mean, unless you get points for having a handsome quarterback in your building. Is that something you're necessarily going to waste a roster spot to bring in Hartman as a number three? They could probably put him on the P squad, but you developed him last year. You spent a lot of time, a lot of energy with him. I'd imagine he's gotten a lot better from being in your building. I like how he's performing. Is there a chance he could be their third quarterback and you lop off what was Driscoll last year, and instead of having two veteran backups, you just have the one with Hartman as a three? Would that be an issue for anybody? I don't think that would be a problem.
I don't think so. I mean, again, at some point you got to let the bird that's been in the cage fly. And what I mean is you how many mentors does somebody need, right? Like Driscoll, who's been around, who's a journeyman to do what Mariota's doing. It's almost like a repeat situation. At some point, you got to let these guys grow together. And you let Jaden Daniels go from neophyte rookie to, he's not a rookie anymore. I mean, he's got legend of the NFC title game. Now kind of allow him to sort of assert more comfort and, so I wouldn't necessarily hesitate to have a younger player with not a lot of experience as part of that quarterback room as the third guy.
Now, here's an observation, and if you go out there as a fan, you might see some of this stuff that I've had for 2 years, which is when you're doing things where you're just throwing the football or like four guys are side by side going through quarterbacking drills, I think Hartman never stands out. He does not have an arm at what I would even say like average NFL level. The example I'll give you is you've seen, I'm sure, a million times the videos and the pictures of them throwing the ball into the net.
Uh-huh.
They do it every practice. Just the couple of times I've watched, Josh Johnson's really good at that. Jaden Daniels is probably the best at that. Marcus Mariota has some success. It seems like if I was to rank the four of them, Hartman would probably not be high on that list. And I'm not saying that means anything. In fact, I would say that it doesn't really. But when they're all in a line dropping back to throw the football, same thing. You're seeing who spins it, what's it look like. And Jaden Daniels stands out. I would say Hartman's kind of the opposite of that. But I do think when you get an 11-on-11, and you see this in his career when he was at Notre Dame or before that at Wake, maybe he's a gamer. He's got some Heinicke to him, but mm-hmm. He just doesn't play in games. Like, what if you're a gamer that never plays in a game? I think there's a little bit of like a Taylor Heinicke to Sam Hartman.
Yeah, that was sort of the Case Keenum deal or Colt McCoy, where it's like he's not going to wow you in shorts and T-shirt.
Think baseball. Bullpen session. You're not walking away impressed.
Yeah, like
you get him out there and he's adding, subtracting, and he's competing, and he's setting guys up and reading swings. Maybe he could be effective.
You remember Chad Cordero, who was awesome, came in studio with us, like talking about his bullpen session where he was throwing like 88, bounced a bunch of sliders, and he's like, oh my God, I'm not even getting drafted, let alone, you know, where he ended up going. Comes in and has an unbelievable career because they saw something. It was more than just, you know, as you said, what the radar gun said.
So two other quick observations from practice today. Quan Martin had a really good sequence. He's had a good camp in general, but back-to-back plays, batted ball at the line of scrimmage, leaping on a blitz, and then he had a TFL, or would have been a TFL, where he thumped Austin Eckler in the backfield. But I thought it was interesting they were bringing him downhill a lot in what was a red zone period, but I would say even more like a goal to go. It seemed to me like they were set up around the 9 or 10-yard line, running goal line stuff from basically the high goal line area. And I thought he did just a couple of things that stood out and showed speed. But he's had a good camp, and he's turned into a nice player. So Quan Martin, I'll give a star two for today. And then lastly, I know people are probably tired of hearing about this, and this has already become too much in terms of the hype train, but really nice day for Jacory Kroski-Merritt again. He had one particular run off the edge on a stretch run, where he kind of super patient behind pullers. Think like Portis behind Mike Sellers back in the day, where he's like waiting. Hits the hole, jump cuts, gets to the edge, gets angled out of bounds, picked up like 10, 12 yards. But Deebo Samuel came run. He was on the sideline, not even on the field. Comes running over to dap him up. It was one of those plays where if you're watching it, you go, damn, that was pretty good.
Yeah, okay.
And he has a few of those, uh-huh. You know, where there's a little bit of burst. They had another drill today where running backs were working on jumping over these bags, like goal line, can you leap over the pile, I guess is the idea. Think about when you're trying to go over the top of the O-line, D-line to plunge into the end zone. And at the end of practice, of the running backs that were still doing this, earlier in the day, Austin Ekeler, I guess, had successfully jumped over four. Like, he was the only guy after practice who was tired, spent, sweaty, whatever, who could clear four bags. I mean, it's a huge vertical. I mean, this would have been like a dunk contest.
Right.
Like, bring me out there, you have to jump over me. Like, he was the
basically
only one
that, a couple steps and a high jump over four. Yeah.
Chris Rodriguez was like plunging into all four bags. Brian Robinson like wasn't really getting close. Merritt just comes up twice, does it. He went for five and almost did that. But he's clearly a pretty explosive athlete. I just like what I see. Now, until he plays in a game, none of it matters. But you want to talk about being excited for Jalen Lane against the Patriots next week. Merritt is on the short list.
I got to figure it out. I mean, the whole goal is to figure out what's real in the preseason and what's not. I mean, you've seen so many stellar preseason performances, and around here, it's what we majored in for decades. But every once in a while, when the quarterback is tearing it up, and you go, maybe that guy should be the starter. He should be. See Gus Frerotte, or see Trent Green, or see some of the guys that stood out as the second or third dude, and eventually they got the call and were pretty good. You're just sort of looking for some of those traits. It's so hard to tell when the other team's not scheming. It's hard to tell when you're going against guys that are going to be delivering furniture in a couple of weeks. You never really know until, as you said, the real lights come on and everything, but you could sort of see signs. You could look for those kind of moments. I mean, to me, that it's like NBA Summer League to a degree, where the only thing I care about is if you can't do it at all. If you can't do it there, we have an enormous problem. I won't know for sure that you're 1,000-yard back and waiting if you tear up the Patriots second team, but I'd rather see that than not.
Yeah, you got to show me something.
Uh-huh.
I hope we get to see him against first-teamers at some point in the preseason. If you remember back in 2012, when they drafted Alfred Morris in the sixth round, and it wasn't like they didn't have anybody on the roster, but it was pretty clear in camp. It was kind of similar to right now in terms of the buzz. He was not nearly as explosive or fast or twitchy as JCM is, but Alfred Morris was like a one-cut, perfect Shanahan fit. And I know a lot of us were like, is there a chance this guy's going to make this team? And then it was like, is there a chance this guy's going to get carries? I don't remember what week it was. I guess it was the dress rehearsal week three of then a four-game preseason. But he played in Chicago, I think it was, against the Bears. And a couple hours before the game, they were announcing that they were sitting, and I can't remember who the starter would have been then, if it was like Evan Royster, somebody like that.
Yeah, it was Evan Royster, Roy Helu.
Maybe a Helu or something. And whoever it was, they were like, he's not going to play, and Morris is going to start. So it was Pierre Garçon, Robert Griffin, like all those guys, and Alfred Morris with them. And on the first play, he stakes his foot in the ground and goes and gets 11 or 12 against Chicago and had a really good game. And it was at that moment that you go, maybe he could be their starter. This is starters against starters. This is good on good here. And that's, to me, what I'd like to see eventually, but I don't know. There's not enough preseason time anymore, honestly. And so few teams even play starters in mass that it is even hard to get those looks for a guy like Merritt, probably. But that's a quick report on practice. I wanted to bring up Terry McLaurin really quickly. I said there was an update on what's going on with him. It's tangential to him. It's not about him. So you and I weren't on the air long enough after the Nats yesterday to really get into this. But Trey Hendrickson showed up for the Bengals. He was not practicing. He's doing the same thing McLaurin is. He's gone from holding out to holding in. So basically this just means he's not going to get fined $50,000. That's what this whole deal is about for both McLaurin and Hendrickson, as far as showing up and being at the facility. But I find this really interesting. McLaurin reports an injury and is on PUP. He could theoretically stay hurt for an extended period of time into the season and be transferred onto another injured list and eventually injured reserve. And he could just not play all year. And accrue a season because of an injury. It's almost strategic to suggest that you're hurt, whereas Hendrickson did not do that. Trey Hendrickson, the other guy holding in, who was holding out, who's called his coach a liar, who's at odds with the Bengals like McLaurin is with Washington, showed up and is just making it very clear, I'm not practicing because I don't have a contract. But to my knowledge, he's not on PUP. He's on like a, he reported, but he's not practicing kind of list. Does that interest you as much as it interests me? I mean, the idea of the McLaurin injury, while I still don't think Terry is going to be the guy that doesn't play or misses game time, by him showing up and claiming injury and being on an injury list right now, he at least has kept the door open to not having to play when the season starts. Whereas when Hendrickson shows up and it's not about injury, you don't give yourself the same option. And I think it makes the chances of McLaurin's situation lingering feel a little bit more ominous.
So, I mean, there are recourses for a team and for the league against a player if they are faking an injury when you get into the regular season. Right now, nobody cares.
Good luck proving that.
I mean, they do. They investigate it. And
sure.
If suspect, you know, the team wouldn't just sit there and go, yeah, tough break about this ankle,
well,
right?
I mean, having your suspicions and proving that a guy's not 100%, I mean, that could be a feel thing. Like, this is a bad example, but Cade Cavalli missed a bunch of time last year over a flu and then an injury. And, you know, you talk to some people and they're like, probably scar tissue, and he's feeling something that's not quite right. He thinks he's injured, but maybe he's not. Like, some of this is mental too, right? So I just think there's a, everything's written in pencil when you start telling a player he's not hurt. They could tell you, I feel something in my ankle. I feel something in my foot. You don't think that's hard to prove?
I mean, for a day or two, but for months, if there's nothing structurally wrong and there's not a single issue, the team's not just going to sit there and go, yeah, we don't know what to do. I mean, there. If it got to that point where we're talking way down the line, where it's that horrible and that toxic and that terrible, where he's tanking the season, he's not playing, ruining his own reputation, lighting fire to all the money like the Joker did, you know, letting the team flounder, and again, undoing all the goodwill that he's ever done by faking an injury into the season, like we're talking about like October, November, where he's still refusing to play.
Which is unlikely, and I don't believe
it
would be the case, because I think he'd come back. But I'm saying September 7th, he's not ready yet, and the ankle's bothering him. I don't know, what is the precedent of a team challenging a player on their injury status and saying he's not hurt and winning some legal fight over it?
I don't know
that that's happened.
I don't know, because it hasn't happened, because it would be horrible for the player too. I mean, your own reputation is
lit on fire. But a
lot
of times players have done that and then they'll get a contract. You're saying in this hypothetical they haven't gotten a contract. Like, I'm trying to think of the last guy, whether it was Jalen Ramsey or one of these guys who showed up and he was like hurt, and you and I are laughing about it. And then I think in his case, he got traded, actually. But I don't remember a guy, and as soon as he got traded, remember the injury got better, right?
Like, it might have been Ramsey, yeah.
It fixed itself. But I'm saying I don't remember a guy who the team played chicken with when they were doing the injury thing who just had to heal there. I think it's either that they've gotten the contract or they've been traded, but I'd have to keep digging on that.
Yeah, so I can't remember instances. Just, I mean, we're talking about the most extreme set of circumstances here.
But is it interesting to you? Is it notable to you that two guys were holding out, one came and held in and is saying he's hurt, and the other one came and is saying, I'm not practicing until I get a contract?
Yes, and I don't know which is more significant, or I don't know which carries more weight. It may just be six, one half dozen, the other. It might also be one is a further sense of a gap, and the other means we're closer. I don't know which is which.
I just know that you can't accrue a season by refusing to play over a contract.
Mm-hmm.
And you can accrue a season, C-A-N can, by not being able to play because you're injured. And that's why I'd rather him be saying, I'm not practicing until I get a contract, because eventually, in that case, you have to show up to even get to free agency. Whereas in this case, I don't think it'll happen. It is possible that you could go the full year without playing because you're hurt, in air quotes.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Jones, pilot or cornerback? Or both?
Both.
Next on Grant and Danny. With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan, not on the Rude Guest Hotline, but kind of on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Jonathan Jones, the cornerback of your Washington Commanders. Longtime Patriot. Him and Dietrich Wise have this in common, Danny. They both played under Bill Belichick in New England for many years and now got free. They can go spread their wings elsewhere. Jonathan Jones after practice on one of the hottest days of camp so far.
Yeah, man, enjoying it, man. We out here competing, you know, every day. It's been good, getting good reps. Getting out here on the defense and just going after it. We got a good group of guys out here. We're competing every day, and I'm excited to be here.
When you've spent so much time and all of your real years at camp in one organization, now you get to do it and see what it's like in another place. How refreshing is that, and what are some of the takeaways?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to join and gain a different perspective at this point in my career. It's awesome to see, you know, how another organization does things. And we're out here working, and I enjoy it. And I'm just glad to be here.
Coach was giving you a lot of credit for just the competition you've brought to the corner room. It does seem like from a year ago at this time when you weren't here, there's massive growth at that position. Yourself, Amos, obviously, Lattimore getting healthier, all factors. How do you feel camp has gone for the corners so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think we did all, they did a good job bringing in a good group of guys. And we come in and we compete. We make each other better. I think there's some good camaraderie within the group. And it's a joy to be out here. Like every day we come out ready to work. And you can see it in the guys in the room.
From a baseball perspective in a bullpen, there's roles for everybody. And everybody kind of knows, okay, seventh inning, lefty, it's me. In a corner room, it's a little different because there's a pecking order. But are you guys still trying to find your way as to like what you do and provide that maybe somebody else doesn't and how everybody fits into the puzzle?
Yeah, I think Coach is going to do a good job of giving us the best opportunity to win. And I think in training camp, it's our job to show our skill set and get better as a team. And so when that time comes, he can utilize us the best way possible.
After they signed you, I went back and watched Jonathan Jones highlights, tapes, and on YouTube. It's just so obvious. You're so willing physically. Like you come downhill for a guy that's not very big and you thump. How far back in your football history does that violence, so to speak, go?
Man, that starts back in the backyard, man. My pops would put me and my neighbor out in the backyard and see who would tap out first. So it's just in you. You know, if you're a physical guy, I think it's just a trademark of you, and it's something I love to carry with me.
Do you see yourself as playing more inside, outside? How do you anticipate your role going?
Yeah, wherever they need me. I'm learning both, being prepared to play both, and so that's kind of where I stand.
Last year, did you take more snaps at one or the other?
Yeah, I think they started to use me more outside last year, even towards the last two or three years, you know, in New England. But, you know, I spent my first, you know, 7-8 years inside, so I'm comfortable with both.
I had heard Dan Quinn mention, I think it was DQ, that you are a pilot, like you flew yourself here.
Yeah.
Is that a real thing?
Yeah.
So when did you get your pilot's license? That's fascinating.
Yeah,
to me.
A few years back when I was in New England. So I've been enjoying it, you know, taking the family on trips, commuting back and forth to work here during the offseason, OTAs and stuff. So it's kind of fun, little hobby I have in the offseason.
So do you fly the plane yourself, or do you need someone with you, like that is a pro, or you are the pro?
Yeah, no, I am the pro. So it's just me commuting back and forth. Got a TBM, little 6-seater turboprop, man. So I just enjoy commuting.
So you have your own plane?
Yeah.
Okay, so you use letters. I don't know what that means. So, yeah. Like, what's – it's a little PJ, right?
Yeah,
so,
it's a TBM. It's a 6-seater turboprop, so it's a nice little get-up.
And you keep it at an airport here or where?
Yeah, when I fly here, fly into here, one of the local airports here.
That is
here.
Wild.
Yeah.
So had you always – like, I'm utterly fascinated by, like, flying. When I'm on an airplane, all I think about is, what's it look like up there? Like, had you always been curious about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think every kid looks up in the sky and says, how does that happen? But I just kind of grew up just motors, you know, motorcycles, dirt bikes, four wheels, just things like that. Then I saw that general aviation was an option, never knew it was a thing. Kind of always knew, like, as a pilot, as a career, obviously knew I wanted to play football and not be a pilot. So once I realized you could do that as general aviation, I went out, booked a Discovery flight, and fell in love with it.
So when you leave camp, if you had a day off, do you ever, like, fly home or fly back somewhere else?
Yeah. My wife, she's 9 months pregnant, so we're expecting here at the end of the month. She's back in Charlotte. So if I get some time off, shoot down to see her, check in on her.
And what's the longest flight you've taken? Have you done anything international?
When I went to the Bahamas this summer, back in June. Me and my wife went over for her birthday, flew over to the Bahamas.
It's just you and her in the plane?
Yeah, just us, and it was a nice little trip.
These are dumb questions, but I'm amazed by them.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, it was awesome. It was a little trip for her birthday. Two of us, about a two-hour flight from Charlotte, so not bad.
Wow. Yeah. All right, cool. Well done, and I look forward to seeing you play here in D.C.
All right, appreciate it. Have a good one. Thanks.
Jonathan Jones. I over-talked about him being a pilot. Like, the last 3 minutes of that interview were just at questions about him being a pilot. You'll have to forgive me. I've never interviewed an NFL player who flies himself to and from the facility.
That's something. Again.
Did I overdo it?
No.
I mean, it's crazy.
It's a detail that some people are like, I play video games. Okay, buddy, how's Call of Duty going? Are you good?
I normally say to people, like, what's your hobby when you get outside of football? And they're like, I like to hunt. I like to fish. I like to play video games. I like to watch basketball.
I leave the safety of the earth and I go up.
I fly 30,000 feet up in the air.
Wow.
He flew his wife to the Bahamas, man. Yeah. And they just got off the plane and they were there.
There's so much about that. Like, you're not going through Dulles for that. You got like some smaller airport. Like, how do you get clearance? Like, you know all the call signs where you're like TK421 for requesting a landing platform. They're like, negative. You can't right now. And you just circle for a while with the other big jumbo jets that are landing. Like, what?
I got a rap lyric for you.
Oh.
I want to see if you can place it. There's no chance you will.
All right.
Just bought a plane, so we change in the weather now.
Who is out? I'm out. No idea.
It's Ludacris.
Oh, yeah. I figured.
From Get Back.
Mm.
Remember Ludacris? Get Back? Nothing?
No. I mean, I remember Ludacris, but yeah. I don't know which
Chris
Get
Bridges?
Back
one is. Yeah. Or is it Ludacris? But my point in bringing that up, Danny, is Jonathan Jones can change the weather. You don't like how hot it is in D.C.
Go
today?
Somewhere else?
My guy bought a plane. He has changed the weather, man.
That is wild.
He'll just go somewhere where it's more pleasant.
I hope he plays well this year and everything, but like, I mostly want him to be around for more plane questions.
Yeah. That would be nice. I think he's had a good camp. The corner room in general has played very well. Here is my concern or nervousness. Sounds negative, but I wonder if they're just looking good because this receiver room without Terry McLaurin allows them to.
I think both are true. They're better than they were last year.
They have to be better.
Dubious honor, but
Amos
yes.
Amos can play. Lattimore's not going to stink again. Jones wasn't here and is a massive upgrade over Michael Davis and some of those other veterans. Sanders still is really good. We saw that last season, and he's probably going to be better in year two. They've got to be pretty solid at corner, I would think.
Yeah. I'm not confident in Lattimore. I think.
But he's not going to play as bad as he was last year.
I don't know.
Because he's healthier.
But for now, I mean, that's part of the pathology. Is he plays seven games, and he's hampered for the other six or seven that he plays. I just don't believe that he's all of a sudden going to become healthy. But to me, they're better because of Amos, because of Jones. And Sanders still in year two. That's different than St. Juiced, Michael Davis, whatever. Noah Igbinoghene was their second corner last year for the better part of the year. He'll be fourth or fifth.
Commanders tackle Brandon Coleman's on the show today at 5:45. The Major League Baseball trade deadline is 3 hours and 6 minutes away. Coming up at 6 p.m. Should the Nats trade Mackenzie Gore? Next on Grant and Danny.
Ludacris.